Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Yesterday, or day before yesterday, started in on some more of the readings around contemplation of the mind, the third satipatthana in relation to the also the Anapanasati Sutta, the third tetrad, and finished up with a bit of a reading from on the Brahmaviharas, the conch trumpeter, and just wanted to go ahead also, and there was one more on loving kindness, as I mentioned yesterday, I think, or the day before, the teachings on loving kindness that are specifically in the canon. The specific teachings aren't huge in number, pretty much along the lines of the formula that talked about, the one that we chant fairly often. And then the commentaries spend a whole lot more time going through and fleshing them out in different ways. And a lot of the teachings that have become popular in the Western meditation circles are based more on that commentarial approach. But leaving it simple to the to coincide with the canonical teachings mostly. But there was one more that I just wanted to read, a very short one, about the benefits of loving-kindness that is in the Anguttara 11s, 11, number 15. It's just entitled Loving-Kindness. Bhikkhus, when the liberation of the mind by loving-kindness has been pursued, developed, and cultivated, made a vehicle and basis, carried out, consolidated, and properly undertaken, 11 benefits are to be expected. What 11? 1. One sleeps well. 2. One awakens happily. 3. One does not have bad dreams. 4. One is pleasing to human beings. 5. One is pleasing to spirits. 6. Deities protect one. 7. Fire, poison, and weapons do not injure one. 8. One's mind quickly becomes concentrated. 9. One's facial complexion is serene. 10. One dies unconfused. And 11. If one does not penetrate further, one fares on to the Brahma world. So, in addition to being an exalted state of mind, and an excellent preparation for meditation, and an excellent meditation in itself, and capable of taking one into jhanas, it's got a lot of very broad-based benefits. I was noticing that the first three deal with sleep. Good sleep. Not to encourage too much of that. But so... That's right. If you're going to sleep, do it with loving kindness. So, any comments or questions about that before we move on? Okay. I thought I'd move on to another set of recollections or a sutta around it that are part of gladdening, concentrating, and liberating the mind. Again, as just to refresh everybody's memory, Ajahn Jeff also makes the particular point that all three of those stages in the Anapanasati Sutta, all the contemplations that are part of those stages tend to have multiple applications in terms of gladdening, and concentrating and liberating. So the six recollections is one of those sets of contemplations that most of us are familiar with. We've talked about it some already this winter, but I thought I'd read the actual sutta, the teaching to Mahanama in the Anguttara 11s also, that talks about them and mentions the story around it. Here we go. And that's Anguttara 11:11, Mahanama. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Sakyans at Kapilavastu in the Banyan Tree Park. Now on that occasion, a number of bhikkhus were making a robe for the Blessed One, thinking that with his robe completed, at the end of the 3 months of the rain's residence, the Blessed One would set out wandering. Mahanama the Sakyan heard about this, approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side and said to him, "Pante, I have heard. A number of bhikkhus are making a robe for the Blessed One, thinking that with his robe completed at the end of the 3 months of the rain's residence, the Blessed One will set out wandering. Pante, with all our various engagements, how should we dwell?" "Good, good, Mahanama. It is fitting for you clansmen to approach the Tathagata and ask, 'Pante, with all our various engagements, how should we dwell?'" "Mahanama, a person with faith succeeds, not one without faith. An energetic person succeeds, not one who is lazy. One with mindfulness established succeeds, not one who is muddle-minded. One who is concentrated succeeds, not one who is unconcentrated. One who is wise succeeds, not one who is unwise. Having established yourself in these five qualities, you should further develop six things." So just to note, those five qualities are the five spiritual faculties spiritual faculties being these abilities potentials that we all have to develop. Well, not all of us have to develop, but it suggests that we have to cultivate them to even bring them into awareness as faculties, and then when they're fully developed, they become the five powers. So he starts out, and that's why it's in the 11s. We've got the five spiritual faculties that he's suggesting to really dwell with and contemplate, and then these further six things, these six reflections. "Here, Mahanama, you should recollect the Tathagata thus. The Blessed One is an arahant, perfectly enlightened, accomplished in true knowledge and conduct, fortunate, knower of the world, unsurpassed trainer of persons to be tamed, teacher of devas and humans, the Enlightened One, the Blessed One." You'll recognize that from our chanting as well, just a slightly different translation. "When a noble disciple recollects the Tathagata, on that occasion, his mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred, or delusion. On that occasion, his mind is simply straight, based on the Tathagata. A noble disciple whose mind is straight gains inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dhamma, gains joy connected with the Dhamma. When he is joyful, rapture arises. For one with a rapturous mind, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. This is called a noble disciple who dwells in balance amid an unbalanced population, who dwells unafflicted amid an afflicted population. As one who has entered the stream of the Dhamma, he develops recollection of the Buddha." And we were talking about that yesterday. That points out to, he's referring to one who has attained stream entry. These are confirmed faith in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha are qualities of a stream enterer. "Again, Mahanama, you should recollect the Dhamma thus. The Dhamma is well expounded by the Blessed One, directly visible, immediate, inviting one to come and see, applicable, to be personally experienced by the wise. When a noble disciple recollects the Dhamma, on that occasion his mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred, or delusion. On that occasion, his mind is simply straight, based on the Dhamma. A noble disciple whose mind is straight gains inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dhamma, gains joy connected with the Dhamma. When he is joyful, rapture arises. For one with a rapturous mind, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. This is called a noble disciple who dwells in balance amid an unbalanced population, who dwells unafflicted amid an afflicted population. As one who has entered the stream of the Dhamma, he develops recollection of the Dhamma. Again, Mahanama, you should recollect the Sangha. Thus, the Sangha of the Blessed One's disciples is practicing the good way, practicing the straight way, practicing the true way, practicing the proper way. That is, the four pairs of persons, the eight types of individuals. This Sangha of the Blessed One's disciples is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential salutation, the unsurpassed field of merit for the world. When a noble disciple recollects the Sangha, on that occasion, his mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred, or delusion. On that occasion, his mind is simply straight, based on the Sangha. A noble disciple whose mind is straight gains inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dhamma, gains joy connected with the Dhamma. When he is joyful, rapture arises. For one with a rapturous mind, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. This is called a noble disciple who dwells in balance amid an unbalanced population, who dwells unafflicted amid an afflicted population. As one who has entered the stream of the Dhamma, he develops recollection of the Sangha. So, and just to point out too that sort of that sequence of inspiration, joy, rapture, tranquility, pleasure, and concentration is a kind of a standard set of qualities that follow, one following the other, when one is starting to develop the mind in concentration, beginning with using an inspiring theme to recollect. Okay, the fourth one. Again, Mahanama, you should recollect your own virtuous behavior as unbroken, flawless, unblemished, unblotched, freeing, praised by the wise, ungrasped, leading to concentration. When a noble disciple recollects his virtuous behavior, on that occasion his mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred, or delusion. On that occasion his mind is simply straight, based on virtuous behavior. And then through the same sequence of qualities that one develops. As one who has entered the stream of the Dhamma, he develops recollection of virtuous behavior. Again, Mahanama, you should recollect your own generosity. Thus, it is truly my good fortune and gain that in a population obsessed by the stain of miserliness, I dwell at home with a mind devoid of the stain of miserliness, freely generous, open-handed, delighted in relinquishment, devoted to charity, delighting in giving and sharing. When a noble disciple recollects his generosity, on that occasion his mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred, or delusion. On that occasion his mind is simply straight, based on generosity. And then through inspiration, joy, rapture, tranquility, pleasure, concentration, as one who has entered the stream of the Dhamma, he develops recollection of generosity. And the last of the six. Again, Mahanama, you should recollect the deities thus. There are devas ruled by the four great kings. Tawatinsa devas, Yama devas, Tusita devas, devas who delight in creation, devas who control what is created by others, devas of Brahma's company, and devas still higher than these. There exists in me too such faith as those deities possessed because of which, when they passed away here, they were reborn there. There exists in me too such virtuous behavior, such learning, such generosity, such wisdom as those deities possessed, because of which, when they passed away here, they were reborn there. When a noble disciple recollects the faith, virtuous behavior, learning, generosity, and wisdom in himself and in those deities, on that occasion, his mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred, or delusion. And on that occasion, his mind is simply straight, based on the deities. As one who has entered the stream of the Dhamma, he develops recollection of the deities. So that's the sutta where those six recollections originate, mentioned. Yeah, and just to emphasize again that that's a really, if the mind is not settling on its object easily, and we're looking to particularly to gladden the mind or to settle the mind, then any of these three recollections, fully developed and considered, are very useful for that purpose. And I think, just in my own experience, you have to be a bit creative too. Sometimes just reciting the phrases, like for the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, you have to be careful not to just get caught in rote recitation, be inventive with it and really put your mind to it and to really allow yourself to explore, say, the amazing qualities of the Buddha, you know, what it really was that he accomplished and how he did it, some of the aspects of his life story and his going forth and the different obstacles he met up with and how he overcame them. And really, just the awesomeness of the fact that he had, his realization, and then lived for many years teaching the Dhamma and sharing it in such a skillful way. So, really, being creative with ways to recollect these reflections, and the same with the Dhamma, not just thinking of certain aspects of the Dhamma, but also really looking at, again, the awesomeness of it, really, just, how it is still intact and alive 2,500 years later. You know, there's not many teachings that were so well expounded and taught and have been practiced for so long that, to the best of our knowledge, remain pretty clearly intact and transmitted and practiced by many, many generations of people who have really used it for good benefit. Same with the Sangha, the fact that even here and now there's a thread that goes back all the way to the time of the Buddha, of at least in a monastic Sangha as well as the lay assembly. But that there's still, best as we can tell, pockets of practitioners who follow the precepts, who follow the rules of the Padimokkha very, very closely as to how they were practiced more than 2,500 years ago. And to just recollect and reflect how so much good has come from that over the generations. So really practicing with these and using them to inspire a sense of gladness, a sense of peacefulness in the mind, a sense of joy. Same with recalling our own virtues and generosity. Sometimes we forget that we can really actually bring those up for reflection. It's not just doing them, and practicing virtue and generosity, but actually making that part of your contemplation, reviewing what happened this day or this week that was virtuous, how it was that generosity has been part of your life. and to really bring it to mind and feel good about that. The one about recollecting the deities isn't one that you hear a whole lot of people talk about doing, but I've done it in bits and pieces, and sometimes it's a little bit hard to visualize or bring to mind something that I've never personally seen, except for maybe when I was a kid and seen all sorts of things. I'm not sure, but recollecting those qualities that get one born into the Deva realm, learning that or remembering that we too have those qualities. And sometimes I think of some of the people I've met in this world who are so well established in generosity and virtuous kindness, good practitioners, many of the lay supporters that I've met, particularly when I was in Thailand. It seemed like we were almost floating in a Deva world at times, as well as here. And that really, you know, many of the people who were around us here at this monastery, who come and stay and visit and live here, are really devas and deities in their own rights. So just remembering that seeing how that affects the mind. Any questions on those recollections or thoughts?
I have found the list of the eight qualities of Sila Musaki is very useful in defining what it means for virtue to be noble instead of just keeping rules. If you get, you know, if you're keeping Sila with those qualities, it's a truly powerful force.
Can you share them off the top of your head?
Unbroken. Let's see, unbroken, flawless, unblemished, unblotched, freeing, praised by the wise, ungrasped, leading to concentration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That list, yeah. Unbroken, flawless, unblemished, unblotched, freeing, praised by the wise, ungrasped, leading to concentration. Yeah, that's a nice series of qualities. Yeah, great.
Something I've been puzzled / struggling with when I tried, when I've been recollecting like virtue or good qualities like generosity, is that and it's not all the time, but I would say most of the time, like there's almost like this cynical voice that comes up that says, no, you didn't do that, or, you know, you did this bad, or this, you know, like kind of saying this is blotched, this is wrong, and just go on and on. And it's just like, and it's just like comes up immediate. And I mean, I know this is pointing to something, but I'm not really to work with it. I was wondering if anybody could share some thoughts. So.
It sounds like to me the what Ajahn Suchito refers to as the inner tyrant, making his name known in your mind. Yeah, I mean it's a habit. It's just another habit of mind that's part of the self-critical, you know, habit that that many of us are brought up with in the West. The whole guilt. Complex, the whole you're not worthy, I'm not worthy of good qualities. And it, you know, a lot of it's, you know, just peculiar Western conditioning that doesn't allow us to really see our own virtue. And just to watch that and see that, experience that, see how painful it is, and start working to ask yourself, you know, would I say this to somebody else? why is it permissible for me to have this view of myself when I wouldn't think it would be, you know, such a good thing to, or I don't even think about it, other people that way, you know. It's much easier to look at other people's virtues, you know, and to try and start applying that to oneself is very useful.
I also have a similar thing. And some way I found to sort of work around it is what you do is you go down the line and you start doing the Siva Nusati or Chaga Nusati for other people, and you keep going until you get it to yourself.
As long as you're not singling yourself out for special attention. Yeah. Yeah, good. Okay, yeah. Any other techniques?
Humor. I just try to think of how absurd it is, or I don't know, like sort of smiling and laughing at that voice.
Yeah.
Or I think JSR one time recommended like either like saying, trying to say that stuff like really slowly and absurdly, like trying to, I don't know, like make the voice, give the voice different characteristics, and all of a sudden it becomes more absurd.
Yeah, and along those same lines, just making it really blatant, you know, like
hyperbolizing.
Yeah, hyperbolizing it, like, you know, like I am not worthy of of good thoughts. I am a basket case. Lampani thoughts. Okay. Well, maybe rather than going on to another recollection, which Ajahn Jeff talks a little bit about, I was going to read something on his thoughts on a mindfulness of death, but it's just 2 minutes before seven, so why don't we just leave it here for now.
Andamaya kamagataya sadhukarangatamase sadhukarangatamase.